I'm funny how? I mean funny, like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
Bueller.
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Put the bunny back in the box.
Bueller.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Chasm, where we discuss film news, views, and reviews. My name is Dave Baldwin, and as always, I am here with my two fearless, dynamic co-hosts, Matt Layden and Greg Durkach.
How Yo. Are
Hello.
Anything going on in the news?
In the box office news, two new releases were Hotel Transylvania, the Adam Sandler animated film, and Looper, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, time travel. And, of course, the animated film came in first place, and Looper came in second. And then Trouble with the Curve with Clint Eastwood stuck around in third place, which was surprising to me.
I found it pretty impressive that...
That's all I got.
I found it pretty impressive that Hotel Transylvania completely outgrossed the last Adam Sandler, Andy Samberg double team.
Both in that, yeah. What did it end up with, 48? 41? Something, 40
something. It was in the 40s. It was early 40s, I believe it was.
And Looper was around 21, I think.
Yes. Recently, they've been talking a lot about Cloud Atlas, the new film from the Wachowskis, and Tom Twyker, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, he directed Run Lola Run. I had the privilege of seeing the film at TIFF. If you guys would like me to explain it to you, you are shit out of luck, because I can't explain it. The trailers are making it even more confusing for me. We were talking about this earlier on before the podcast, that Larry Wachowski became Lana Wachowski, and they announced since they're not really going by Wachowski Brothers anymore, they're now going by Wachowski Starship. I'm not even kidding. That is their new duo name, Wachowski Starship.
What?
I can dig it.
You can dig it?
Like Cobra Starship.
Whatever happened to Cobra Starship, Greg?
Snakes on a Plane happened.
Wait, what does that even mean?
That's their name. That's their new name. So when you see... you won't see it in Cloud Atlas, but I guess when their next movie comes out, it'll say directed by the Wachowski Starship.
As if it was like a production studio or something.
I guess so. The other weird thing is now that he's a she, they're doing... they're not as enigmatic and not talking anymore. Like, you know how when The Matrix came out, yeah, they didn't really talk?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen nothing but interviews and clips and Q&As from Cloud Atlas.
Well, isn't that always, like, women never shutting up?
How politically correct of you, Greg. You are a wonderful
person.
It
was there.
Cloud Atlas is very stylistic, but there are a lot of substance problems with it.
When does that come out for general release?
That comes out on October 26th.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see that.
And my biggest problem with it is that I don't know who it's for. The genre, like, they flip-flop on genres because each story is a different genre. Yeah. For those who don't know, Cloud Atlas is about interconnecting stories, and there's about six of them play, and each actor has a part in each story. So it's pretty wacky seeing how much... makeup goes on some of the actors. Like Hugh Grant, I don't think you actually see Hugh Grant's actual face.
I saw a picture of him under a bunch of makeup, and I was impressed because I didn't recognize him at first.
Yeah, because he seems to get the most makeup of everyone. But as I was saying, my biggest problem is I don't know who it's for. I don't know how they're going to mass market that movie, because outside of random people who are, like, interested in the idea... I don't see everyone else being down for a 3-hour movie about interconnecting storylines across generations. So it's definitely a chore to watch. I would watch it again, but probably not in the theater again. But it's interesting. It's an interesting
film. Would you say it's a theater movie?
More than likely, yeah, because of the scope of it. Some of the things they do are pretty magnificent.
Is it like IMAX?
They're actually putting it in IMAX, but it's not an IMAX movie.
It wasn't filmed in IMAX or anything.
No.
Okay. I'm not going to see it in IMAX anyway, but...
But some of the grand scope is pretty impressive.
So before we dive into Greg's list...
Oh, I know. This is a good one.
I want you to skip like an overview of your whole TIFF experience, because I believe our last podcast was before you went, and now it's all over and done with.
Yeah, I'm still recovering. that saw Silver Linings Playbook, which won the Blackberry People's Choice Award, which usually goes to the best film of the festival. So that was really good. That one will probably get a number of Oscar nominations. That one comes out in November. I saw The Sessions, which is about a man who... It's a true story, actually. He beat polio, but then he's basically crippled for the rest of his life. He spends most of his time in an iron lung. And he's a journalist, and one way or another, his one of his outlets asks him to write an article about sex within a disabled community. And because he's a virgin, he decides he kind of wants to not be a virgin anymore. So it's about his struggle and his adventure, I guess, okay, is the easiest thing to say. Getting over or doing that.
It's a 40-year-old virgin, but with polio.
Kind of. It's a little more heartfelt and a little less disgusting. Although it's pretty frank about all the sex, and I've seen a lot of Helen Hunt now. I've seen a lot of different shades of Helen Hunt now. But I found a lot of the movies I saw ended up being real disappointments. I saw the new Bradley Cooper, Ryan Gosling joint, Place Beyond the Pines, which was very boring, very dry. I saw Seven Psychopaths, the new Martin... What's his name? Martin...
McDonough,
I think, is his last
name. Kevin Brana?
It's not Kevin Brana. Yeah. I believe it's Martin McDonough. Then that movie I was really excited for, and it disappointed me. I saw Antiviral, Brandon Cronenberg's film, Son of David Cronenberg. That movie sucked.
When we went and saw Looper, they had a little featurette about that film. And the director, Cronenberg's son, was just, you know, talking, blah, blah, blah. And Michelle called him a pretentious douchebag for the way he was talking about how he made the film and why he made the film.
I saw that feature and I thought the exact same thing.
It's a very pretentious film. And it's very disappointing.
Yeah.
And it's much too much like his dad's old stuff in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much like that. The aforementioned Cloud Atlas, I was disappointed by. The new Terrence Malick film, To the Wonder, which I'm sure Matt will really run to when it comes out on DVD, because that movie won't come out in theaters. There's no way. That was actually one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was awful.
Really?
It was like watching paint dry.
You know what? It could be a totally different film by the time if it comes out.
I hope to God it is, because nothing happens. But my favorite film of the festival, top one, was one we discussed last time, Spring Breakers, with James Franco, Selena Gomez, and Vanessa Hudgens. It was pretentious, but it was just really fun. It knew exactly what kind of movie it was, and it took the time to really be a stylistic piece. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's done really stylishly well. At the beginning of the film, they rob a restaurant in order to get the funds to go to spring break. And the entire scene is shot where the two girls jump out of the car and go in through the back door, and then it's POV from the passenger seat as she's driving around the restaurant. And you see them running around in the restaurant getting all the money and, like, robbing people blind. And then, like, it ends with them jumping back into the car. But it's, like, complete shot just like that. And it's really stylistically well done. And I really enjoyed that. And then there's also a 5-minute introduction with Skrillex playing and just topless girls doing wacky shit on the beach.
So it is your type of movie.
It is definitely my type of movie.
And we're on a 3DDD.
And of course, James Franco, dreadlocks, grills, covered in tattoos, just amazing.
There's no trailer for that yet.
No, but there's a couple of clips, and some of the clips are gold.
This was my dream. I made it come true. This is the fucking American dream, y'all. This is my fucking dream, y'all. All this shit. Look at my shit. I got shorts, every fucking color. I got designer t-shirts. I got gold bullets, motherfucking vampires.
But yeah, those were probably the highlights of the 11th.
So overall, it was kind of a disappointing year?
It was a very disappointing year. There was a couple of great things, but a lot of disappointing stuff.
Mm.
I wasn't too overly impressed with it. So on to Greg now with your latest foray into your list.
As you'll recall from the last podcast, Matt assigned me with watching The Pianist.
No! 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 Don't shoot! I'm Polish! Please! Oh, I'm Polish!
Come out with your hands!
Please,
out.
I beg of you! Don't shoot! Don't shoot, I beg you! I'm Polish!
Come please. Down!
Please! I'm Polish!
Please! Please! He's Polish!
Yes, he's Polish.
Why the fucking coat?
I'm cold.
Lighthearted World War II Holocaust drama.
Lighthearted.
Not quite the words I used to describe it, but I'll give it to you.
I don't know. It's a Holocaust movie. There were a lot of... Music was great, like the piano score was great. It evoked a lot of... emotions. Basically, it retells the same story that you've seen 100 times in 100 different Holocaust stories about suffering, persecution. Pretty much every time you see that kind of stuff, though, like, it's still shocking. It still punches you right in the gut, though. It was really well done.
Well, okay. That's all he's got.
All right, well, here's the thing. I gave it to you to watch because any film dealing with the Holocaust, this one probably... I don't want to say favorite, but I think it trumps anything that's ever, even Schindler's List, I'm including that. Because compared to Schindler's List, in Schindler's List we get it from Liam Neeson's point of view, and he's well off. He's not in any real sense of danger, and he's helping the Jews sort of escape their persecution. And then in this one, it's just the story of one man's survival who loses everything, his family, his friends, everything. And it should have won Best Picture that year. Polanski, who wasn't in attendance at the Oscars for obvious reasons, deserved to win Best Director, and I'm glad he did. Brody also won Best Actor, and as Dave mentioned last time, hasn't done anything great since then.
Splice.
You have a soft side for Splice, I know. And it also won Best Adapted Screenplay. And... the film is littered with images that are striking, and one that to this day still sticks with me is when Brody is saved from going on the train, and his entire family and virtually everybody else is thrown on, and he survives that. And then the next shot is him walking down, and the streets are just piled with everybody's luggage and belongings, and he's just bawling his eyes out. And then it starts raining ash, and it's the ashes from his, like, dead family and everybody that was on that train. It's just a very heartbreaking image. And there's all these little tiny moments in the film that stay with you forever. Like, when they're waiting, and that woman is crying behind the woman, and she's like, I'm annoyed by her. Why is she crying? And the guy says, oh... she suffocated her own baby so that they wouldn't be found by the Germans.
And then the baby's death rattle gave them away.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy who tried to steal food from this other woman, and it falls on the floor, and he's just, like, eating it off the floor. And then the other scene where you mentioned last episode with the wheelchair. So they throw them over, and then they just drive over the bodies. All these little tiny moments are scattered throughout the film, and it's just so heartbreaking to watch and so visceral in such a way that it sticks with you. And I think The Pianist, again, above any other Holocaust movie, spoke to me personally the most. And I guess I was trying to hopefully have you spark the same interest within you.
It evokes that, you kind of feel like you're watching it from your own perspective as a victim. At a much smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, say, Schindler's List, where you're watching it, like, kind of from a third person's perspective, where you're watching other people suffer, but you're still very detached. A lot of those images do strike you, like, you're horrified by what you're watching. And a lot of it is, like, the actors portraying it all in one shot, so you're almost wondering, like, they're actually beating these actors. They're actually, like, shooting these actors.
Mm-hmm.
They probably were. It was Europe.
Yeah, that's true. Like, the one scene I'm thinking of is when he's trying to pull a kid from under the bridge, is near the beginning, or a bridge, a wall, the wall, and, like, from on the other side, you know that, like, the Nazis are just beating him to death, mm-hmm. and by the time he actually pulls him out, like, the kid played dead so well. It was crazy. Like, he was so limp, and, like, it was all one shot, so it was still the actor.
Mm-hmm. Would you say he was method?
Yeah, he was very method.
Well, that's the thing. You can literally... There are dozens upon dozens of scenes that you can just pick out randomly and be like, that is such a heartbreaking moment. Like, when they line all the Jewish people on the floor and the guy goes one by one, shooting them all in the head.
Yeah.
And the last guy, his gun is empty. But he doesn't stop. He goes to reload his gun. And just the guy waiting there, knowing that the guy's reloading his gun and he knows he's about to die, it's just that much more heartbreaking seeing that and him knowing that he's about to die and it's just being prolonged all that much longer.
Well, and even watching the beginning and seeing him, like, happy with his family and, like, hopeful, oh, we're going to be able to get out of here. France is going to save us. I'm like, it's 1939. I know history. That this doesn't end well.
Yeah.
But, like, you even feel that hope with them. Like, oh, I want them to get out of here. I want them to get out okay. They're not going to. Mm-hmm. I know, but I'm like, you feel for these characters who you only knew for about 10 minutes at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching that journey is intense.
I really love it. I saw it on a whim years ago, and I really, before it won Oscars, and I really enjoyed it. I do find it better to be Schindler's List because it's more focused, the story, whereas Schindler's List is kind of taken from different points of view. It's mainly on Liam Neeson, but you're also on Ray Fiennes, and you're also on Ben Kingsley. Whereas this one is almost singularly on Adrian Brody and his journey, as you said. And it's just, it is very visceral and it's very affecting. It's very moving. And I think it's bullshit, just utter bullshit, that Chicago won that year because of Miramax and Harvey Weinstein. Because you can't even say it was Polanski's fault because they gave Polanski an Oscar. They really stuck it to everyone and gave Polanski an Oscar that year.
Yeah.
And, like, Adrian Brody won over Jack Nicholson and Daniel Day-Lewis, who were fighting the whole way to the Oscars. And the only thing Adrian Brody won was the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, it was a very just like, it's not, it seemed like that night Oscar was like sticking it to the man, and then they give it to Chicago. And as far as I'm concerned, Chicago sucked. And it hasn't stuck with me at all. I know it was a whole new renaissance for musicals, but I haven't really seen many musicals since that have really resonated or done nearly as well.
I mean, like, if you were to make a time capsule film, a time capsule, and put, like, a bunch of films in for future generations, or if aliens came down and wanted to watch movies, I would put The Pianist.
I think that's the first thing they'd do.
One of the things I would put in there.
Make sure you throw a DVD player in there, too.
What is this archaic technology?
But, yeah, just... There's a couple other films I would... That might make it on Greg's list, but The Pianist is one of them, for sure.
By the way, the Nazi at the end who helped him out, he was in 24. Main villain of the second season. Trivia.
So what was your final grade, Greg?
9 point something.
Nine point three, 9.2.
All right, when we're at that point, does it matter what the point
is? So you gave it a 9.
This guy, let me tell you. Greg Durkacz, he reviews a film, and you think it's going to be one way, and then he gives it a completely different rating. He gives it a 9, but his review's like, this game's got good music, but, you know, whatever. And
would you say the music was jaunty?
No, it wasn't jaunty. It was very skillful.
And Adrian Brody...
I was wondering that.
Every scene that you see him playing is him playing. Except for the close-ups of the hands that somebody...
I was going to say, that was really weird, and I didn't think that you actually saw... At a certain point, I just started watching maybe halfway through the movie to see whether you see a full-body shot of him playing, or if it's just, like, above the chest, and then, like, a close-up of the hands.
Him at the beginning, that's him playing. There's not many scenes where he's playing piano. Only, like, maybe 2 or 3.
The only one that sticks
out... It's mostly at the beginning, and then it's at the end.
Yeah. There's 2 I know at the beginning. The opening, and then when his sister comes in, he has to quickly go through.
I was going to say, there's a couple times I don't want to say restaurant, but that's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I love the scene when he's playing for the Nazi at the end. And you just see on the Nazi's face, like, this man is incredibly talented and we're just killing millions of people like him.
Yeah, it was like the first time he ever saw a Jew as a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that realization.
Yes. So, 9 point something is what you give it. I give it a 9.5 out of 10.
Okay.
It's definitely one of my favorite movies of the past, I don't know, decade. When did it come out? 2005? 2002. Yeah, they just made it.
Just made it.
What would you end up giving it?
10.
10? Yeah.
10.
Although I'm going to be a harsher critic and give it 9.4.
I gave Schindler's List a 10, too, but I do like The Pianist more.
So really, is there any meaning to these if you're just giving things 10s?
This was back in the day when I used to give 10s out a lot more easier. I've gotten a little less easy in the
You've given out 2 10s on this podcast already.
I know.
3 now. Schindler's List.
What was the second? Oh, True Romance. What was the other one?
The Pianist.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go.
And now you just said Schindler's List.
I'm pretty sure it's not. You have to give Schindler's List a good grade. You can't give it a bad grade.
Oh, and it's just like Liam Neeson just throughout the whole thing. He's Liam Neeson. In a good way.
In a good way.
In a good way.
Before he became a badass.
Yeah.
If they make Schindler's List 2, he'll go in and start killing Nazis himself. So does that mean I have to give Greg another film?
Yeah,
you're next.
All right, well, I went controversial last time. I'll go controversial again. I picked something really old last time. I'll pick something really new this time. Cool. Sean Durkin's Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
You're going to have to write that down.
I have it if you need to borrow it.
Sure, I'll borrow it.
I watched it the other day on Netflix.
Yeah? Don't say anything.
We'll talk after. We'll talk after. You know what? No, we'll talk. We'll talk when the podcast comes. The next podcast.
That's fine. Let me just say.
No. Don't even start that sentence.
It's recent, so I won't have any bullshit complaints about it's old. And it's unfortunately not on Criterion. Sorry.
You know, I've grown accustomed to a certain standard with Criterion.
The other one I was going to pick was a Criterion one, so you'll get that one next time.
I understand Nanook of the North. I don't understand Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
All will be revealed.
just be careful with these picks if they're going to be all controversial, because like, I will jump over this and punch you right in the mouth.
It's not bad.
Okay.
Controversy as in...
why he's giving it to you.
Okay.
As in...
That's fine.
1920s to 2011.
Time travel has not yet been invented. But 30 years from now, it will have been. I am one of many specialized assassins in our present called loopers. So when criminal organizations in the future need someone gone, they zap him back to me. And I eliminate the target from the future.
Oh la la.
Loopers are well paid. We live the good life. And the only rule is, never let your target escape. Even if your target is you.
Ryan Johnson?
Yep.
His third film after The Brothers Bloom, which actually stars Adrian Brody, and Brick, which was on Greg's list last time.
Yep.
Did you enjoy Brick?
Yeah, I liked it.
I like it better than Brothers Bloom. I don't really like Brothers Bloom that much.
Didn't bother checking that one out.
Tony really likes it. He has explained it to me, but I just... It's not that it needs explaining.
He explained it to me.
It's not that it needs explaining. It's just more a very artsy, very...
Yeah.
He was going for a certain mood and a certain feeling, and mm-hmm. I wasn't feeling it. So how do we feel about Looper? I tried to see that one at TIFF. Didn't get into it. Got to see it, a couple days ago now? So it's only been almost a month since TIFF, so it wasn't too long a wait. How do we feel about it?
Overall, I liked it. I like sci-fi movies. I like time travel movies. I like Bruce Willis. I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And they're all in this film.
What about Emily Blunt?
You know what? I'm on the fence about her. She's never really impressed me. The same goes with this film. She wasn't really like a standout performance at all.
Jeff Daniels?
I like Jeff Daniels, but he didn't really have enough screen time for me. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a looper who is a assassin who has to kill people that are sent back through time by the mob because they're it's difficult to get rid of bodies in the future, so they get rid of them in the past. He's given a task of having to kill himself, which is Bruce Willis, 30 years in the future. Of course, shenanigans happens and Bruce Willis gets away and it's a cat and mouse type game. And I was looking forward to it. A lot of people gave it praise, saying it was the best movie to open TIFF probably ever. And by the end of it, I see where all the praise is coming from. I see a lot of nods to other sci-fi films, and a huge one is The Terminator, which is what basically Looper at one point becomes. And during the movie, I saw them sort of pinpointing little points, such as people who have telekinetic abilities, and it's such an odd and specific thing to include in a movie like this that you have to think that it's going to play some role in the film. And then it does at the very end, and it plays an actual major role in the film. And that's sort of what took me out of it, because it turns into a different film. I went in expecting like a time travel type movie, and I got that, but I got this as well, and it sort of takes away from it instead of add on to the world that Rian Johnson creates. And I said earlier that I enjoyed two-thirds of it. I really love two-thirds of it, and I like that final act. So I didn't love it as much as other people do, but I do think it's a really good movie. I do think it's probably one of the best this year, and it's probably one of the best sci-fi movies to come out in a long time.
Well, I do generally like time travel movies. I like them especially when like the world outside of the time travel element is still grounded in either reality or at least some kind of like logical core to it, where like if it's not our world per se, at least the things that are different, more out there, more wacky, have a certain logic within themselves that like you can buy. Which Looper did, but again, like the telekinesis, I think that seems so out of sync with the rest of what the movie was doing. I said to Matt yesterday that I would have loved Looper if there was no telekinesis and no time travel. I would have loved this time travel movie without the time traveling. This is the second point. But because the time travel, I wasn't sure of what the rules are as far as like paradoxes. What can you change? What can't you change? Can you even change it?
I don't really think they care. They didn't really touch on that at
all. They made that point in the diner. Bruce Willis is like, don't ask me that. That doesn't matter. And like I understood that, but I still thought about it in the back of my mind. Like, well, yeah, that's fine. But what are these rules? Like, I would still like to even don't explain them, but give me the tools to figure it out on my own. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, you're supposed to kill the person, and that's supposed to be the time. You're closing the loop. So it's not like you're changing. You don't change anything. You still live your life out, then you get sent back and you're killed by your younger self.
Exactly. Like, are you going, but, well,
so there isn't really, there's no real, like, deliberation as to what you can change and what you can't change, because you're not supposed to change anything. That's how your life is supposed to play out.
Well, and that's my favorite type of time travel movie, is kind of like the 12 Monkeys or The Lost, where, like, whatever happens, happens, and you can't change the timeline. If you go back and change something, that's what was supposed to happen in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's, that sort of, they sort of break that rule in this film.
They do. They're much more Back to the Future rules, where you can go back and change things. Or they're more like Terminator, where it's like, maybe you can, maybe you can't, it's weird.
Well, yeah, like the whole Terminator thing, going back to try and kill somebody to change the future.
Yep.
That's like the whole plot line of the original Terminator.
Yeah.
And the second one. And that's what
and the third
halfway and through this one. Film becomes. Like the first part of the film, there's one storyline, then the second part there's a different storyline, then the third is another, so like different storylines that sort of interweave through this film. That was a little odd, but at the same time brought a little bit of originality to it.
It did.
I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I didn't have many problems with the third act. The only thing I really disliked was the CGI, which was very awful in some scenes and very green screened in others. There's this motorbike, there's like a futuristic motorcycle thing, and they ride it, and every time they're riding it, it looks atrocious.
It looks pretty bad.
It looks really bad. And considering how much effort they put into Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face,
which looks great,
looks fantastic,
yeah, that was
at
great.
All times. Why did they put any more effort into the green screen?
Mm-hmm.
His face was a distraction up until you see the flash forward of his life where he becomes Bruce Willis. And you see Bruce Willis's life coming. You're like, they look a lot alike.
Yeah, because you see his...
He looks like an older version of him. Cool.
His slow progression to Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I liked that. I thought that scene was really cool. That was whole really sequence.
Actually, when that happened, I'm like, did the film sort of jump back? Like, is this... Are we going to see the same thing over again? Like, I didn't really get what he was doing. And then once it showed him killing his future self and living out his life, I'm like, oh, okay, this is Bruce Willis's first timeline.
Yeah, I didn't really find as many problems in the third act. Yes, it kind of hinged on a little bit of Terminator, and it hinged on things that have come before it, but there's no real originality left, like true, unique originality left. Everything seems like a copy or a rehash of something else, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But I really liked how it's set up. It did feel, now that I'm thinking about it the way you were talking, it does feel like a couple of different movies together, but I thought he stitched it together well. Performances are all great. Everyone's good. Some people, like Jeff Daniels, probably could have done more in it. He was very enigmatic in the movie. And by the time, like, his last scene comes, I didn't really feel like his character did enough.
You know what? The whole time I was waiting for younger Jeff Daniels to show up in this film.
It's true. Like,
I think he was there. We just didn't get an explicit line saying he is him.
You know what? A lot of people thought that it was...
Kid Blue.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that because I don't think Jeff Daniels would put his younger self in jeopardy of dying. Because then he would disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think that would be the case. I think he'd probably sort of stash himself away somewhere. And
well, not if he already remembers his younger self going through a lot of these events. Depending on how similar or different this is from what he remembers.
I don't know.
Which is where the confusion comes in with this whole time travel. Because we don't know whose memories are what.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. When new events happened and Bruce Willis was getting new memories, the whole time I was thinking, like, so is he going to see everything double? Like, once he sits down and has a conversation with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is he going to see that in his memory happening at the same time? Is it going to happen twice to him or something? I just think these weird things during the movie once they introduce these new aspects. And one scene that I actually really liked is when... Paul Dano's older self from the 30s.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
Comes back and he actually runs away and they capture his character's name is Seth, younger Seth, to sort of lure older Seth back, and they're just like taking off body parts and you just see him sort of losing a nose and then losing a leg, losing a limb, and he's just trying to make it back so that they can kill him. A lot of people are complaining. I thought that scene was really cool, really well done. He sets up some rules that you were alluding to earlier. But a lot of people were questioning why they don't just kill Seth and have him disappear. I think the organization, the mob or whatever, has to follow certain rules. And Seth lived to become 30, so they have to try and keep him alive.
It does change his future.
It changes his future, but I think they mentioned they don't want to sort of, you know, they don't know what would happen in a situation like that, so they want to try and correct it as much as possible.
Maybe so, and also this is the mob where, like, they're all about sending messages and all their actions.
Yeah.
So maybe they're saying, like, they wanted to make it known that, like, if anybody does something like this, this is what's going to happen. It's not going to be quick and clean. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose your limbs one by one. And you're, like, this is not going to be an enjoyable process.
I think the only thing that actually genuinely bothered me was during the Joseph Gordon-Levitt to Bruce Willis montage bit. They show that he's still a junkie and he's gotten worse, and that his new wife kind of helped. And then you find out later that his wife, or his eventual wife, helped him kind of get over that and mm-hmm. move on and kind of go clean. His younger self, it takes like half a day for that to happen.
I thought they...
There's like a struggle for Bruce Willis, but I know that that's years of substance abuse, but half a day seems a little shortened.
It seems odd that they just have... They include that sort of storyline and then they sort of throw it away at the opportune point in time to advance with whatever storyline they want.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like Greg was alluding to, in time travel films and sci-fi films. In this one, they sort of keep how we live today, like her living on a farm.
Yeah.
And they keep what we know as reality intact, and they just have little tiny things like that flying machine that sprays the cornfield. Those little tiny things to tell you this is the future. But yes, we're not losing whatever we know today like other sci-fi films do, like Blade Runner or something like that. Well, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and that was probably more realistic portrayal of the future.
Yeah.
Like how like 20 years ago, or maybe 40 years ago, we would have expected by now we'd be like living on the moon, driving flying cars.
Yeah.
And now we know it's not the case. It's actually not that different from the way it was. We just have
flying motorbikes.
We just have things like iPhones and flat screen TVs and like 500 channels.
Well, that was the other thing they're doing, like that touch screen thing that kept coming up and coming back down. That seems like a logical progression of a touch screen iPhone would be something that could be just a progression, a hologram. Because then we have the thing with Tupac coming back as a hologram.
Well, absolutely.
So that seemed like a logical progression versus, again, going back to Blade Runner, how everything was very just totally out of this world outside of Asian culture becoming a dominant force in North America.
Which is what's going to happen.
He's seen the future.
It already did. Yeah. It was good with that one. And they have those cool umbrellas that have like the light up
the neon thing. Yeah.
So
I need to watch it again to see like what misunderstandings I had were because of my own confusion versus what maybe wasn't explained as well as it should have been in the movie.
Was there any, do you have any glaring mistakes?
Not anything I could specifically point a finger at. Just, like, I want to, like, revisit their idea of time travel and, because it's weird that that's the most intriguing thing to me about this movie, because that's really not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Even, that's just, like, that's the catalyst of the movie, but that's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm. But no, like...
But that's what I want to know about.
Yeah, you only see the time-traveling machine once.
Yeah, well, the whole point of the movie is that, yes, it involves time travel, but that's not what the story is about. It's about, this thing over here.
Well, the same way Inception is a heist movie. Mm-hmm. It's not about dreams at all.
It's a James Bond film, really.
It's a James Bond film. Same way Dark Knight Rises isn't about Batman. It's about James Bond.
Final remarks, I really enjoyed it. Like I said earlier, just, some aspects of the film kind of took me out of it for a second, but one of my favorite films of the year. It'll probably, by the end of the year, still be in my top 10.
Same.
I give it an 8 out of 10.
Well, I was going to say 8 too. Same. Copy-paste.
Copy and paste.
Control-V.
I really would like to watch it again. Like, not for Greg, but just to kind of, not the same way Greg wants to watch it, but just because I want to watch it again.
Yep.
Like, right after it ended, I was like, I could go another round of watching that. It was just very enjoyable, all around great. And 8.5.
Mm.
I think I'd like it better, a lot better the second time.
Final thoughts on anything tonight, fellas?
I enjoyed every movie that we talked about, The Pianist and Looper and every side movie, like Schindler's List and whatnot.
Well, that about wraps it up for another edition of the Movie Chasm. I hope our audience had a great time this evening. This has been Dave,
Greg,
and Matt.
And keep watching and listening.